asking that question.
Yeah.
So we're moving on to psychopathology part one. We used to have psychopathology four parts because we were members of the UKCP and we'd really got to flag up all psychological work. But we've found that increasingly difficult, and our training isn't a psychotherapy training. And in the end, we withdrew from the UKCP, United Kingdom Council for Psychotherapy. And what we're doing this year is Psychopathology Part One, which I sent you a whole bundle of notes, and Psychopathology Part Two, which is Anne's going to do later on about some of the medications. But we are not doctors. Neither are we psychotherapists. And so but there's no doubt that, of course, on many levels, autogenic training is a psychological therapy. And Donna and I work at the hospital under the psychological therapy team. And nobody understands what AT is there. And it's been there for nearly 40 years now. It's quite extraordinary. And other things have taken over, and we've got mindfulness. Oh, CBT, we didn't talk about yesterday. That's not the same as an altered state. But CBT is very big. And then what they do is refer anybody who hasn't responded to those things to us, because we are quite a mystery. Oh, well, go and try autogenics and see what happens there. And then and then after the assessment, people often remark to me, I've never actually been spoken to in this way before. And it's always been the doctor asking the questions and imposing something, this and that and the other. And they've had a bit of a more of a free rein. We've asked questions, of course, but they've had stories. So our work is a slightly grey area. And Donna, I really want you to interrupt as much as you like today, because in many ways I don't know what I'm talking about.
Sure, that's not true.
Well,
I'm sure you do.
there was a huge bundle of notes I sent you, and you may not have read every word of it at all. And I started them off from BV, Brigitte Vogelmann, she is a psychotherapist, and she wrote a long package of notes, and it needed editing. And so the next time a course came around, I edited her English and sort of tidied them up a bit. And then I thought, actually, why don't we extend these and just have quite a lot going on about the sorts of things that are around, whether they come to you for AT, I have no idea. And what we really need is not how other people treat these conditions or these situations, but actually how we can help them through autogenic training. One story I had, I think I might have told it before, was a woman who was she was probably in her early 60s, something like that. And it was in the era about 20 years ago when they were emptying out the mental asylums, as they used to be called, the psychiatric hospitals, the long-term ones, were being emptied out and converted into flats, and they wanted psychological treatment to be in the community, which was much better for the patients. And for many patients, that was quite true. These were not seriously disturbed people. Now, this lady came to learn autogenic training. I honestly, now it's in the midst of time, and I haven't got her notes anymore, and so on. But I simply remember her talking about her upbringing, which had been very difficult and a very strict background, and her father had her locked up in a mental asylum. She actually used that term when she was about 15. Now, in today's terms, she was just being an awkward teenager. But we're talking back in the 1930s, something like that, where, of course, the whole adolescent thing hadn't been invented, and it was just a strict father who couldn't cope with his wayward daughter, as he saw it, and so on. But of course, my first reaction was, I can't take this person on, for God, she's been in under mental health care for so long. This is, and I asked her a bit more, and I said, was there ever a diagnosis? And she said no. And the doctors were saying I shouldn't be in there, but nobody knew quite what to do with me because I'd been living in there for so long. How would I cope when I left, and what was going to happen? And so this policy then of closing down these places meant that she had to leave, and she did start a life of her own, and she did find some work, and she did live a life, and she did find some friends. And my whole sense of her was, hey, of course we must teach her autogenics. You know, she clearly there was nothing wrong with her ever. How on earth she survived in that environment for all those years? She must have been in there. She must have been in there 30 years. I mean, it just doesn't. It doesn't. It's a story that I can hardly believe as I'm telling it here now. And she did wonderfully with AT. There was just a lovely flowering of her. It was just lovely, and she was very grateful. And whatever she took away from it, there we were. Now that was all on her story, and my reaction to the story, which was, this is absolutely genuine. This is a person who's been through an extraordinary time. So, hey, let's at least start autogenics and see what happens. And of course, she went through it absolutely wonderfully. And if she hadn't, we would have stopped. And it's quite simple, quite what might have happened. But I knew she wasn't schizophrenic or anything else. It was absolutely clear. And she had no medication, and there was no indication of needing anything like that. So we will meet people who, it turns out in the end, might have some psychological condition that really perhaps we shouldn't have taken them on, but they hid it so well behind a personality disorder or something like that. And actually, it's a few weeks in that you realize, I don't think this is actually working. But can you guess what might happen before I say, I'm really not sure it's a good idea for you to continue? What might happen before that? Remember, we follow the client.
Well, they might not turn up.
Exactly. Or even say themselves, I don't think this is for me, but I think they're more likely not to turn up. There's going to be something in there, which actually would be correct. Their own brain saying, this is not for you. And maybe they have multiple personality disorder and they are so adept at hiding it that it was simply not detected at assessment. So, we wave them goodbye, figuratively speaking, maybe, or maybe drop them an email and say, I can appreciate that perhaps you're thinking this isn't for you. That's absolutely fine. I suggest you don't actually practice any more autogenics and just continue with where you were before. Now, that could be the sum total of what we talk about today. Donna, what's your experience in this field?
I hate labels.
Oh.
I really do. And what makes we're all on a spectrum of something. We all have good days, bad days. It's just some people get labeled heavily and some
Yes.
people don't. It's and we hide it and we don't admit it or what have you. So I hate looking at somebody's diagnosis and their label. Autogenics is we look at the person, don't we? Treat the person no matter what and what that person brings. So yeah, I totally agree with what you did with that lady. You go with what you've got. And I am also a firm believer that the client knows best.
Yes.
So if it's not right, they will act out even if they don't know what they're doing consciously. They just won't turn up. They'll forget to
Yes.
come to a session.
Yes.
So it will sort itself out. And that's not to absolve me of any responsibility. But I would take everybody on sort of face value and talk to them really and find out what they wanted and if it suits them. Because a label is a label and you've got so many people under that label that are
Yes.
completely different to each other.
Yes.
So
Yes.
how can you say, oh, I won't touch anyone with ADHD, for instance, or whatever we're talking about, because one person, it might be exactly the right thing for somebody else, no, but that's a personal choice. That's not because of the label.
Yes. I've talked a number of people with ADHD, but that wasn't their reason for coming. So,
Absolutely.
it's a company, and of course it is affected by stress. So anything that we can do with the autonomic nervous system is going to help that, one would hope. So, you know, I'm so glad you've used the word label. That's exactly what we're talking about. Those notes are absolutely stuffed full of other people's writings and definitions and things. And I thought, well, actually, it's a sort of reference should you want to go and look at something. I'm not going to pretend that everything is accurate. I'm not trained in that area. But as long as we think about what we are doing with autogenics, then, and of course, you're going to talk to the client. Yes, you're going to follow them. And I think the other very sensitive place is psychosis, which, of course, could be something that just suddenly bursts forth and we don't really quite know where it came from, is the person having medication because they suffer psychosis. But then there's always that other question. The psychosis might be their own defense mechanism. It might be their own way of processing, which is the only way they know. And it's other people who slap that label on. So that's coming back to you, Donna. Who is this person, really?
Yeah.
And so I wouldn't want to take on anyone who's had a very recent spell in a psychiatric unit because they've had their second psychosis in, 3 months or something like that, that episode. I would just, let's see how things settle down and so on. And there's no reason, of course, why you shouldn't talk to someone and not teach them autogenic training. And just say, look, before we start, shall we just have a few conversations about how life is for you and what's going on and when are your bad times and good times? There's no reason why we shouldn't be a little bit creative like that. Of course, it adds to the cost because they're going to add a few more, couple of sessions onto the front of the course. And out of that sometimes comes their emotional state and you can begin to talk about the emotions. So we're doing things a bit back to front. I've done that a few times. I've got someone at the moment, actually, I'm really not sure. I don't think she's going to come back, but she's taking a rest from autogenics. And she's got a tremor in her leg. She's having it neurologically investigated. And it's just in one leg and it's not there all the time. And it is stress related. And she cannot do her autogenic exercises because of the tremor. It keeps interrupting her and it keeps stopping her. And of course, my sense about that is actually she's wishing it wasn't there. And that's why she can't do her autogenic training. So we've had that conversation. And then she said, I think I'm going to stop this. I can't do it. And so I'm quite happy to let her go if she really doesn't want to continue, but I don't want to let her go if actually there's a little tiny tweak in what she's doing and how she's doing it that might lead her through this. And so I've said, so what about not worrying about the tremor? Oh, but I hate it. I can't do it. Okay, so she's got loads of anger there, right? Yes, we know that. So we haven't got very far. We got just past short stitch and then into heaviness. And the exercises being longer are intolerable for her. So that's why she's taking a break now. And she's going to ring me actually today to see, no, tomorrow to see if she wants to come to Tuesday's appointment. But that's where we are with her. Sorry, I've moved off, haven't I? But it's about an attitude of mind very often. If she cannot tolerate trying to do autogenic training with that tremor, then she's actually not going to get anywhere. So I'm trying to introduce a little bit of tolerance. And I said, play with it a little bit. Don't follow the program. Just do a few right arm heavies to see what happens. And I don't know what the answer is yet. We'll have to wait. I'll have to wait till September. I'll have to keep her notes to see what's happening. But she isn't. Well, she has got a psychological. She has. Well, we've all got psychological conditions, for goodness sake. We're all going through our stuff in life, aren't we? So don't pretend. We won't pretend that any labels don't apply to us in some form or another from time to time. Of course. So we will see where she goes with it. Yeah.
I totally agree with labels, Jane and Donna. I really do. I've certainly had a lot of people that have had, you know, diagnosis of bipolar and this and that, even schizophrenia in the way that, and they didn't, and multiple personalities and stuff. And I think if we then, we just hold the space of love and acceptance for who they are, it's very often the first time that they've ever felt that they were received and cared for. And miracles can happen, really can. So, you know, the way that I look at it, I'm just going to continue the way that I do. My work is pure word of mouth. So I think in a way, somebody that will have learned AT from me, and this is, of course, this will be in the future, but I think whoever they recommend to do AT, they will have a sense if they could do it, if it's their partner or their daughter, or do you know what I mean? Yeah. Because I don't get cold people into that don't have a experience of my work. So I think that can probably be advantage for me.
Yeah.
I think in the way of
It can be. And of course there are hundreds and thousands of people who just have their ordinary, it used to be the expression, the worried well. And the worried well do well with autogenics. They've just got their normal lifestyle issues and situations and relationships and whatever else. I say normal because there isn't a normal, all muddled and confused, as very often we all are. And they do really well with autogenic training. So you'll have just as many of those as you might possibly have something at the other end of a spectrum. But I wouldn't call...
Do you have in England a lot of anxiety now after the pandemic as well? Yeah, so it's up in the media and, yeah, good. This is why I think autogenics is such a beautiful thing to introduce to the masses or whatever it's called. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yes, absolutely. Anxiety has been going on for years. I mean, I noticed when I started my practice a long time ago, it was anxiety that brought people to me. Now, that wasn't about pandemics or wars or anything else. In fact, quite a number of people I taught in the early days, there was a question on the questionnaire was, have you been separated from your parents? And one of the examples for that was wartime evacuation. Because I put that in because I was seeing people, what are we talking about, in the 80s, and the war had ended 40 years before, but they were, that was a question that when they answered yes, there were stories, and that was important, and they'd never been talked about before. So that was an interesting learning curve for me. Yeah. So if you had time to read all those notes, and they weren't terribly well structured, but
they were great anyway.
They were good. Okay. Where was I? I was going to look at page 11. I had it in my mind. What did I spot on page 11? Oh, I think actually there's some quite useful things on page 11, which is actually how we are when we are talking to them and the situation with transference and counter-transference, which maybe Donna knows far more about than I do.
Yeah, we talked a little bit of that, didn't we? Yesterday, with not being able to go with a client where we haven't been ourselves. Yes. And I think that sort of ties in a little bit with counter-transference if we're not aware of what what's happening with us, then we can get sucked into something a lot easier or a lot quicker than if we are aware of our patterns and what's going on. I'm just trying to find the page. Sorry,
it's on page 11.
Yeah, for some reason mine didn't print with page numbers.
And the other one that I catch myself doing a lot is projection. And I really have to hold on to that. When I'm not seeing the person as they are, I'm putting myself in their place in that situation and what I would do about it. I mean, it's disgraceful. So, I mean, I do realise it. There she goes again in my thoughts and stand back. And that reminds me of the work I did with the Eugene Heimler methods, human social functioning. That was wonderful. That went so well with Autogenics. So that's another tiny organisation that is you know, a bit like our organisation. It's not out there, and but it, the wonderful way of counselling there, and the simple message: just put yourself in your client's shoes, which is a very simple message, and if you are, if you can, and you, it's not difficult actually. Stopping yourself, what you would do in that situation, and then the stepping into them, you can.
There's an easy way out of that, actually, is to just ask them, so tell me how that is for you.
Yes, of course.
And
absolutely.
Then they tell you, and then yes. You don't have to put anybody yes. in anybody.
And you don't know, yeah, you're quite right. You're quite right. And of course, and then the other thing that the Heimler people used to say was, hey, look, they are in the pool. Let's get in there with them and we'll swim around together and we'll see what that happens. And I like that analogy. I like swimming. So that was a good one. As long as I can get out. Yes. How was that for you? Yes. It's so simple, isn't it? And of course I'm doing that. Of course I am. Yes. Oh, that must have been a really hard time. That sounds like really difficult. How long did it go on for? And you've got the tail.
And also,
go ahead.
I was just going to say, be aware of what comes up for you as well in that, because I've had some very, you hear the tale and you think, oh God, that must be awful. And I felt relieved. It's not my story, but then I will check out and I will sort of say, I'm sensing some relief. Oh God, yeah, I didn't care at all. So, and I picked that up through me.
Yeah.
Not listening to what the client was saying, because on the surface you would think, anybody would have thought, God, that's absolutely awful. Hmm. But the client actually wasn't telling me that. The client was saying the tale was awful, but
yeah,
they were very, very happy it happened.
Right. Yes.
So
it is interesting, isn't it?
It's all about body language, and I think being with doing the AT, it makes you more body conscious, so we can pick up our sensations in our body a lot easier than maybe other people can, because we know and we can feel it. There's something in us that we can feel. Hang on a minute, I'm not getting this. Oh God, that is awful. I'm getting this. Oh, thank God. feeling.
But almost, I mean, I think I'm hearing you say that, thank God that wasn't me sort of idea.
No.
No, it wasn't that. No, okay.
It wasn't me at all. No.
No.
I was nothing to do with this. They were feeling, thank God it happened.
Yes. I did get that bit, but I just thought, that, yes, right, got it. Yeah. Yeah, you had.
Oh, I got a question on number 5, their body dysmorphic disorder. The yes. BDD.
Yeah.
And I have quite a lot of clients with that. And I work with it with the Voice Dialogue. But my question for you is, have you had any, and I don't know if this is correct, but I'm just asking, you know, the offloading exercise, they're very angry very often with their body because it's not looking right and stuff. Could we put the body in the chair and they talk to the body? We can do
if they want to. It has to be down to them. But yes.
Good. Good. Okay, good. Thank you.
Yes. Sorry, I just found it. Yes, absolutely.
On page 8.
Yeah, it is. And it says it's an expression of anxiety about the body appearance. But you're talking about anger, aren't you? Aren't you? I mean, or could be either. I think we would watch out for either.
It could be anxiety. It could be. But what I found in my work is that body dysmorphia is that they are angry that the body is not what they want, with long legs and skinny and all that. Always comes down to anger, that they are really resentful. They don't want the body they have. They hate it, in fact. Yeah.
Yes, yes, so they hate it. Of course they do. And hating it is an angry feeling. And I'm very intrigued here, actually, So I don't know where this all came from, whether it was Beebe's notes or did I look it up? I don't know. But somebody has written it's an expression of anxiety about the body appearance. And actually, no one is acknowledging that anxiety is a very common mask for our other emotions, both anger and the need to cry. Mm. And that's very important.
Yeah. I think there is a lot of anxiety about if you've got body dysmorphic disorder, you are anxious going out, for example, that people are going to look
Indeed.
At you. And there is a lot of anxiety about. Yeah. But deep down, I totally agree with here. The people I've come across, they hate themselves.
Yes.
Absolutely loathe how they look. They don't like mirrors. They can't have mirrors. A lot of people, they won't have anything that makes them like reflect to see themselves. And it is anger.
Definitely. I found too.
Yeah.
Also, if I may ask, in number 7 on page 8 as well, with addictions, substance use disorders, what is your experience with AT, with any substance like food, social media, whatever it is that they binge on? What is your
I haven't worked an awful lot, specifically with it. I mean, it'll sometimes come up maybe as a sideline almost. I was addicted to sugar. Now, I may never have known that before, but suddenly in week 4, they've realised that they're finding their tea is too sweet and they're cutting down on the sugar, or they're cutting it out completely, or something's happening on that thing. But that's nothing to do with taking the history and having a really difficult time. I think on the whole, and please interrupt Donna, but I think the people who are really addicted to something, of course, the addiction might be a form of escape, or it might be a genuine addiction, say, to the drugs or the alcohol. Now, what am I saying here? I haven't actually worked with many people. I think it actually shows that they don't really come for autogenics before they perhaps go to AA or something else. Now, I've taught a number of alcoholics who have proudly shown me their St. Christopher medals, you know, and they say I am an alcoholic, and my antennae go up, and then they show me their medals, which they carry around, and they say, I've got 14 of these, it's 14 years now, but I know I am an alcoholic, and this is me, and this is where I am. And they are wonderful people, and they commit to autogenics, and they are, and I'm the sort of half dozen, I suppose, over the years, who have really, that what they have found they needed was something to follow the AA. They have done all of that, but they are still left with the tendency to want to drink. And they are still left with that anxiety there. The thing that made them start in the first place probably hasn't been addressed. And that's where autogenic training, certainly in my experience, has been absolutely brilliant.
I wonder if that's because they still have a label that says I'm an alcoholic. And I in no way diminish the work of AA, because I think it's absolutely incredible. But it feels like maybe there's a bit missing where they learn to identify with something else.
That's interesting, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah. I wouldn't be at all surprised. Also, I mean...
No, go ahead. But also with the 12-step programs, you know, you have to stick with the program and call your sponsor every day and all that stuff. And when they drop it, they go back to their, it's documented.
Yes, it is, isn't it?
And it just, to me, it's because they haven't dealt with the cause of the addiction in the first place. That's just so they medicate with the program. Yes. That's what I found. Yeah. And I know it's fantastic. I'm not saying that it's not.
Yeah.
But people that give it up because now they're fine. Anyway.
And the one, I mean, and actually, maybe in some cases the label helps, because because I am an alcoholic. I know I've got that tendency. I never want to get down there again. I'm never going to go back to that.
It's so a physical thing.
I need to know that I am an alcoholic. I mean, everybody's going to be different. I quite agree with what you've said, Bev. And on the other hand, I can see how for some people it's actually important to keep that label for them.
Yeah.
And I've got the same thing with weight.
Describe it more as, I have, a weakness or a dependency on an alcoholic substance, mm-hmm. As opposed to creating an identity that says I am, because it's all defining then.
Yes. You're right.
Anything else in that definition, is it, of a person?
Yeah. It's a bit firm their eyes.
Donna?
No, I was just thinking it actually. If you keep walking around saying I am an alcoholic, you will always be an alcoholic. There's no to be something else.
Yeah. No, and isn't that leading into what we're going to talk about next when we go into the affirmations and the personal formula? Our words have meaning and power behind them, don't they, in the subconscious mind?
Yeah.
Yes, as Donna was saying, I am an alcoholic, I was thinking that's a personal formula.
It is, absolutely.
So yes, those things. Well, those things, of course, I mean, say that could be very, very powerful then to have that dialogue. Are you? And then see what happens.
Yeah.
In other words, you see, there's room for everything, isn't there? Because I'm really, for myself with weight, I mean, I used to be hugely overweight, and I eventually pulled myself together and got lovely ways out of it. And there's no way I'm going to go back there. Absolutely no way.
You were overweight.
Yes. Yes.
Wow, I couldn't even imagine that. Wow.
And well, I mean, I still am a bit, but I've got an age that can forgive it a little bit.
Well, very inspired, Jane. Well done, you.
Well, yes, and it was a lot. And actually, do you know? I'll talk about this now, although it might be more appropriate in the personal formula. But it was one thing. Somebody was running a seminar with somebody who'd come over from America and was doing these weight loss seminars. It was only an afternoon, using a bit of hypnosis. I thought, that's ridiculous. I'm not going to be. And he said, actually, I think this was someone I was in a networking group with. So he. Tricky one. He was drumming up business for this weight loss seminar. Okay, he could have put a notice up and we could have looked at it, but he knew he'd got to do it personally because he'd been through it himself. And so he had to talk to the people he knew. So he was going up to the people who were overweight that he knew. And I was one of them. And I thought that was extremely brave. Because, I could have been in denial and just said, well, no, I wasn't. What business is of yours and all that stuff? So I didn't, though. And so he probably knew me well enough to know that I wouldn't. And then he said something that was very powerful for me, because he told me about his experience, just a little bit, of going on that seminar. And he said, and the key thing is that nobody ever talks about losing weight, ever. Losing weight is not a phrase that we use at all.
It's like you lose something and then you need to find it again.
That's exactly it, Bev. You've got it.
Yeah.
And so that was the opening statement of the seminar. So when you lose your car keys, how do you feel? When you lose your library book, or when you lose your credit card, whatever, you've got to go and find it. You really have. And there's that urgency, and it's impelling us all the way. Never ever talk about loss, because loss, losing weight, is the only loss that we are glad about, which is putting the mind under a lot of pressure. So let's change that. So what else can we find?
I say to my clients, release the weight.
Oh,
it's our word.
Yes.
Reduce body fat.
We're moving now into the personal formula bit. But that was a thing that intrigued me, and I thought, actually, I'm going to go on this seminar. And there was a lot of other very, very useful information, like the foods that contain serotonin, which make you feel good. And eggs is one of them.
Wow.
And ever since I've had scrambled eggs every morning for breakfast, and I don't eat anything else for lunchtime. And anyway, and if I do, then it's got to be something like peanuts, which is quite useful. But dates, they also have serotonin in, feel good. And as long as we eat stuff that makes us feel good, then we're fine. And that's why we eat chocolate, because that also has serotonin in. And I haven't given up chocolate. Woo-hoo! I'm just very careful about the times of day I have it. Anyway, this is all about me now. That's all wrong. Well, how did we get onto that? Can't even think.
What did we still learn?
It was, yes. And of course, I was addicted to chocolate, and I knew I was, and I was secretive about it, and I was like an alcoholic with my chocolate. And it all stopped, just like that, because she hypnotized us.
Yeah.
So
totally the same.
So I'm glad, though. That, I mean, this again, it's about me, but it's, but I'm glad to know that I was that, and I am no longer it, and I am so determined not to go there again. I just watch it very carefully. Which is all about, it's not about diet, it's about the way that I eat, and that's fine. And so I need a little bit of, I am an overeater, I am a, or whatever, you know, just for me. I know that for me, but then we're all different, that. Yeah.
It's awareness, isn't it, again, just being aware.
That's aware.
Of you.
Yes. What's that saying? One bite on the lips and 2 inches on the hips.
Yeah, so,
yeah. That's me. I mean, that is so me. I have to carry that one in my mind. So we were onto sort of addictions and things.
Mm. Yeah, I think it's helpful to talk to people. Why they drink. I mean, if somebody just has to get up in the morning and drink and drink and drink, you're not going to get anywhere.
No.
But I had a counselling client who used cannabis, and she was a drug addict, and all these labels and words came at her, so she gave them to me. But then when I talked to her about it, she actually needed to get out of the house, out of her job, out of family, go into the garden. And it was the space that she needed. And that was an excuse that she used because nobody wanted to be around her while she was smoking. So I really wanted to teach her AT to give her something instead of, but she never let me get a word in edgeways. She wouldn't have listened to what she had to do. So, but just her talking gave it, giving her space.
Yeah.
Gave her the space that she then didn't need to use the drugs for. So. Although on the surface of it, oh no, you know, she gets stoned and I wouldn't touch her. Actually, I didn't know that she used cannabis until halfway through the counselling sessions, when she just said, "Oh, my mum's told me off because I should have told you that I'm a you know use drugs." And I thought, oh, okay, I hadn't picked up any of that. But then, then she explained, and I thought that was why she used it. So maybe people use drinks sometimes for that. And if you could give them something else to give them what the drink gives them, then the drink would just fall away. But it's getting that, will they respond?
Yeah.
And getting the right window, I suppose, to be able to teach them.
Mm. Yes, it does depend on the client's willingness and wanting to change, as all this work is about, isn't it? Yeah. And eating disorders, I think a lot of this, I mean, the sort of addiction side of things is what we are aware of, that if they're currently in a very bad space with an eating disorder, it doesn't matter which one it is, then don't start, because the process could just be quite difficult of self-hatred and all sorts of stuff. They need to be the treatments for anorexia sound really, really tough, don't they, from time to time. I mean, from the time to times when
and
I
they
hear
often
about
don't
it.
Want it.
Mm.
There's a lot of it that doesn't work.
Yeah.
With eating disorders, because I believe that they look at it totally different. But anyway.
Yes.
But yes. I don't know. There was a beautiful book, and I think that would be really good in for this chapter. Is, I don't know if you know him, Gabor Mate.
Oh, yes, I come. Well, the name chapter? I have. Yes. Yes.
Yeah, Gabor Mate, the body, when the body says no. I think it's a brilliant book. Brilliant book. Yeah, I've done his training. He's a good man. He really understands what addiction is. Really understands.
I think eating disorders are very much, I always see them more at that, more than like an addiction. I see them as self harm.
Yes. Yes, absolutely. Yes.
So if you can sort of, what if you can get to the client to a place where they can at least tolerate themselves, and then like themselves, and then love themselves, you know, is too strong at the beginning, but then you've got a way in, and don't mention the eating at all, because it isn't about the eating. It is about hurting themselves. Just, you know, if somebody was cutting or what have you, it's very much like that, I think.
I agree, Donna. I think there's something like, I don't know a lot about homeopathy, but the treatment of like with like, and it feels like the cutting and the hurting is creating the emotional pain.
Mm-hmm.
There's some kind of like meeting together of those two things that brings some kind of relief.
Mm.
And it sounds the most bizarre thing, you know, but
they want the pain. It's they are already in pain.
Well, no,
they want to experience it.
They're already in pain. They want the release.
Mm, yes.
That's what they want. They don't want the pain. They want the release.
Yeah.
It's. I find it fascinating. Fascinating.
Mm.
Really fascinating.
Heartbreaking.
What I have found in my work, and with I work with a psychiatrist in an eating disorder unit. And I can't prove it, but what I have come over the years is that people that has had chronic eating disorders, and it might just be overeating in quite like doing, and I'm one of them. I had massive food problems. And I said to him, oh, I see a lot of my clients, and when I dig into it, they have narcissistic parents, and he seemed to agree, which was really, really interesting. So the pain of growing up with narcissistic parents were too much, so they needed to be fulfilled with something else, because they didn't get the love. Okay. They wanted to be fulfilled with something else, so they ate. And I was one of them. I had massive food problems over the years. Massive.
And of course,
worked out.
The word that's coming to mind for me is nourishment. That we are looking for nourishment. So we are eating. I mean, it might be.
I think as well that food becomes a substitute for love.
Yes.
In many, many relationships, you know, I can see the patterns in my own family of where there's not perhaps maternal expression of love, which children so desperately need, it's given in the form of sweets and chocolates and thick pops. So that a relationship with food is, if I want to feel that feeling of love, I need to ingest something, usually high sugar treats, something that feels, you know, like a reward or something nice.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, because it makes me feel good.
Mm.
Yeah.
And in my family, it was very much, you know, if I was in pain, oh, don't worry about it, have some sugar. So my way of dealing with pain was that I had to have sugar because that made me feel good. I mean, it's very common, but yeah, it's a fascinating area, that's for sure.
What's the song that's coming to mind, Pia? A spoonful of sugar makes the medicine go down. From Mary Poppins.
Uh-huh. There you go. There you go.
Thank you for that. There's a lot of insight, isn't there? Which, of course, in our discussion, is staying here, but we'll have little nuggets of it coming up when we're talking to our clients. Pia, you're breaking up a wee bit. We won't worry about it, but but we can hear you fine. But the image is sort of coming and going a bit. So, but
okay, maybe I should go on. Okay, maybe I will go on hotspot.
Okay.
Maybe my internet is not good. I will just come in and out, and maybe this will be better. Yeah.
Okay. Well, it was fine up until about 10 minutes ago.
Oh, I don't know. Hang on. You carry on.
I find myself Googling or wanting to Google. I haven't actually done it. Foods that create serotonin. Yeah.
Now, I'm confused. Foods that create serotonin is one thing, and foods that contain serotonin. And I think I got the message. Coriander's another one, not the seed, but the plant.
Yeah.
Coriander leaves. And I have a feeling that they actually contain it, so that you are eating serotonin. And that's my belief. So if that's my belief and it's working, then I'll continue with my belief.
Yeah.
I don't care whether it's wrong or right.
Or maybe they activate a release of serotonin in the brain. Yes.
It could be. So do look it up. Do look it up. I can't be bothered. I'll just carry on eating my eggs.
And, I'm with you on that, Jane. Yeah. I have eggs for breakfast every morning.
Yeah. So, have we got hotspot up and running then?
Yeah, it's hot. It's hot now. Is it better? And I'm actually very hot. I got the air condition thing on and my fire, so I'm just like in a sauna. I just realized.
Oh,
is it better now? Do I break up?
No,
we know you're not orally. Just the image sometimes is a little bit fuzzy, but it's better than it was. So that's brilliant. Yes. Okay. Right. So, I remember doing this. Melanie Klein, I knew nothing about Melanie Klein, and I started to read about her, and she sounded an absolute monster of a woman. So, yes, all of that stuff. If we go back to Freud and all the theories of everything, we're way beyond that, aren't we? We wouldn't even dream of again, it's about labels, isn't it? You know, what is it? Is it men or is it doctors who love the labels?
I don't know. I really don't know.
No. But I put it here so that, well, I think Bibi put it here.
Melanie Klein, founder of object relations theory. Yeah. I've just Googled her.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And she experimented on her children.
Did she?
Yeah.
There's the monster.
Yeah.
Okay. Wow.
Yeah.
Yes.
The books that's recommended in I think it's in this one, isn't it? Which I love is definitely Gabor Maté, but also Alice. What's her name? Alice.
Oh, Alice Miller. Alice Miller? Yes.
Yeah.
They are brilliant. Extraordinary books.
Mm. Yeah. Alice Miller, yeah, she's fabulous. She really is.
Yeah.
And then
also Bessel van der Kolk is wonderful as well.
Yes. Yeah.
He's really there's some really up to date good stuff out there.
Yes. Yes.
It really is. Yeah.
Yeah. And it's all grist to the mill, isn't it? It's not, I'll do that when I'm teaching autogenics and I'll take this from that book. I mean, it isn't like that at all. Of course it isn't. It's in the moment. You have an idea and you realise afterwards maybe that came from something or other, and it doesn't matter where it came from. It was useful at the time. That's the important bit. Yeah.
It's interesting that just looking at the reading list, Carl Rogers isn't on here. on becoming a person.
Oh.
It's all about just being a person. There's no labels or anything. Carl Rogers is just my hero, actually.
Yes.
It's just sense, just common sense in everyday yes. language as well.
Yes. And human.
Human, absolutely. Mm. And following the client, because the client knows everything that the client needs to know. They might need help finding it or accessing it, but the client knows. We don't know. How can we? We're not them.
No, exactly.
Yeah.
Thank you for that. I mean, I didn't do this reading list. This was, I suppose, BV's. But client centered. I mean,
it's
of course it's what we do.
Exactly.
Of course it is. So that's interesting. So really, this is sort of, what was the other book I was thinking of? I love The Road Less Travelled.
Yes.
Which is Peg.
Yes.
And this sequel, another one, The People of the Lie.
Oh, yes, yes.
Which is absolutely
devastating.
And you can't believe that people in
that's
parental
evil,
roles.
Isn't it? Is that the one about evil?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a very brave book, actually.
It is. But yes, it's, I shuddered several times when I.
Yeah.
Unbelievable that people can behave like that.
Mm.
Yeah. Mm. Yes, no, that is amazing.
Yes, what was the other one? Oh, it's gone. It doesn't matter.
Here, you mentioned The Lady After Alice Miller, and I can't remember who you mentioned. It was a double-barreled name.
It's Bethel van der Kolk.
Ah,
it's,
yeah.
When the Body Says No.
Yes.
No, that's Gabor Mate.
No, I've got that one on Kindle, actually.
What's his name? The Body Keeps a Score. That's
it. Yeah.
Oh, yes, I've heard of that, yes. Yeah.
Yeah. Brilliant books.
Oh, that's very apt for what the title is, isn't it? So that's Bethel van...
Bethel van der... I'll email it.
Okay.
I'll email it to you.
Thank you.
I'm just wondering, Jane, if some of this does need a bit of a rewrite that we... Because it is very psycho dynamic,
yes,
rather than all the stuff that is coming out now that is centered, body centered,
yes, and more humanistic. Shall we update the? Let's update the reading list. Yes,
I think so. Yeah.
And could I put a suggestion in?
Yes.
and it's only because out of my own pain many, many years ago, I went on a big, and that was because I was overweight and whatever. But it mentions, what is it called? Narcissism. Yeah. And I think it's really important to put it in here because it's so up in the media now. People talk a lot about narcissism and whatever. But I think it will be really helpful if... it is the grandiose and the covert. It's two different. They're very, very different.
Uh-huh.
Covert is the, and that's what my parents were. I had two parents that were covert narcissists, and they talk very shy, like they're very shy and they're very humble, and you will never think there's anything wrong with them or that they are mean people because they're very, very, you know, so you'll never get them. So they're not the, da da da, he look at me, grandiose narcissist, but they're covert. And Gabor Mate and Bessel talk a lot. I've done both of their trainings, and they recommend to really look into it because a lot of the problems in growing up is with narcissistic parents. And it's becoming more and more and more in the media now. I think it's just time that we wake up to it. And they just are what they are. But if we learn how to navigate our life without them, then I think we're in a good spot, you know?
Yes, absolutely. Thank you. Is that those two types of narcissism in the Gabor Mate book? Is that what? your point is, or is it another book?
What would be so fantastic is I actually done an interview with her. I flew over to meet her and did her seminar in the States. They're a brilliant book. I give it out to every of my clients. Her name is, she's a psychologist. She's written two books, and they're called Running on Empty. And it's very body-minded too. Mm-hmm. She's a psychologist, and she talks a lot about emotional neglect. She's brilliant.
What's her name?
Jonice Webb.
And
please get the first one. I'll find them and take some screenshot and I'll email them to you. I'll do that in the break. Really, really brilliant. I'll send you the interview as well. She talks a lot about what emotional neglect does for us, and they're brilliant books. Brilliant, brilliant books.
So Running on Empty is the first one, is it?
Yeah. And then I think there's one on Running on Empty. And the next one is about relationships. But she talks about it. They're brilliant. Actually, I'll find the interview and I'll send it to you. It's only 12 minutes. It's not long.
Thank you.
Yeah, she's good. And they're lovely books, because a lot of people that has problems, you know. And this is why I really don't like labeling. I really don't. Because I think it's a lot of... I'm going to swear.
Yes.
Bullshit. I really honestly think it's bullshit.
It keeps people stuck. They give them a label.
Yes.
You're stuck.
Yeah, yeah.
What you do in life, this is what you're going to be like, or this is what you take with you. Get rid of it and find out who you can be, is my thinking.
Yeah, and this is why AT is just, oh, goodness me.
Yeah, absolutely. You get
but to also think that we are, I think the world is getting a little bit more ready for AT as well, because there is a lot more understanding in this country anyway, and I know in Denmark as well, that we don't have to be mentally ill or anything. It's just mm-hmm. that we didn't have enough love when we grew up, and we, you know, and who are we actually? So there's so much more emphasis on living the best life we can with what we have, and it is to be settled in the body and have a nervous system that's settled. It's so simple, really. Yeah. Anyway, I'll do that.
Thank you. I think we can finish. I think because we can go on talking about this for hours on end. Actually, we should have a seminar or something one day, and AT talks maybe.
Know, I'm going back to the original idea of a book group.
Yeah.
As well.
Yeah.
But we'll see.
That's a good idea. Yeah. Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. But, and the other thing, I'm just going to sort of flag up something a little bit sideline to this, but everybody talks about mental health as though it's a problem.
Yeah.
I get really cross with that language.
It's so wrong.
Because it's mental ill health.
Yeah, that's the problem.
That is the problem. And so, you know, so that's another denial, almost, to saying that everybody has got a mental health. You know, if I'm mentally healthy, there's something wrong with me. No, that isn't right. That's so there we go. So I quietly try and correct it every time I hear it. I change that name. Shouldn't we be calling it mental ill health or mental illness if it is that obvious?
Yeah. And I think some of it is that we don't teach our children how to be okay with the full range of human experience.
Mm.
That they grow up thinking that life is about being happy and feeling joy and love.
Yes.
And if they feel angry or hatred or all the other things, there's something wrong.
Yeah.
And we don't teach them how to be okay with it and to healthily express it like we do with the offloading exercises and so on. And then, then it has all kinds of like acting out and problems. Yeah. I mean, that's just a small, small thing, but, you know,
No, it's quite right.
Huge. Yeah. Absolutely.
Yes,
yeah.
They are hard done by not allowing. It's rather like the story I was telling yesterday about Stephen's group, and somebody was crying in the middle of reception, and they were all running around trying to put them, you know, yeah. and nobody was saying, hey, this is good. Well done.
Yeah.
Brilliant.
Yeah.
We don't know what it's about, but something's going on here, yeah. you know, and it's yeah. only movement anyway.
Yeah.
It's just moving. Shall we go and get maybe a cup of coffee with a stiff brandy in it?